another day. Another dollar makes you wonder where your money went. You can
Hi, this is Jack Spierko with another edition of the Survival Podcast. One man's view of the changing world and the changing times and the things that we can all do to live a better life. If times get tough, or even if they don't. I believe today's episode is episode 75. It may be 74. I'm not sure. I didn't look at the blog before I left the house, and I'm doing so many of these things, they're beginning to run together. What I do know for a fact, though, is today is Thursday, October 16th. And we are here together again during my 50-mile morning commute. It's like one friend talking to another about what's going on. And remember, it may be a one-way conversation when you're listening to the audio, but there's many ways to give me your opinion and make suggestions, etc. Back at me. There's our forum. There's our blog. And, of course, you can send me email at jack@thesurvivalpodcast.com if you want to participate in the discussion on another level. And I do try to get everybody's opinions filtered back through, maybe not always by identifying a person by name, because a lot of times a lot of you have the same opinion. But I do try to get things back through, and I'm going to start off today with an interesting little question that I got from two different people, and I'm sorry, it's been a while. I've tried to stay out of the political mess, and this is a little bit political because it talks about the Obama campaign. But it's just an interesting question. I was talking to my son about it last night. I decided I needed to share this with you because it's just, again, it's just an interesting colloquialism, I guess. What the question was is, Jack, you say folks, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 times on just about every show that you do. And it doesn't bother me at all when you say it. I kind of like when you say it. I've also heard a lot of speeches from Michelle Obama, Barack's wife, and I've heard her say folks this and folks that, and it makes me crazy, or I don't like it. Once it made them crazy, once they really don't like it. What's the difference? How come you can say that word and everybody's okay with it, and when she says it, like, it drives me nuts? What's the problem? And I'll tell you what, here's what I think the issue is. When I say folks, I'm including all of us, including myself. When I say folks, it's usually something like, folks, we really need to think more about this. Or, folks, I'm telling you, if we don't, right? When Michelle Obama says folks in her little stump speeches, she's like, well, folks in California are, and folks all across the country are, right? Her elitism makes it very clear that she's not part of those folks, all right? Folks with me means all of us, and folks with her means you, and you are somehow separate from her. That's why it bothers some of you when you hear that from her. That shouldn't influence your vote on the election. If you want to vote against Barack Obama, there's a ton of reasons you can find to vote against Barack Obama. And if you listen to this show, the fact that the guy's anti-gun is about as big as it gets. But again, I'm not here to influence elections or tell you how to vote. That's not my deal. I'm voting third party in the presidential election because my state's going to McCain. If you're in a state that's either going to go to McCain or Obama, it's known. The one side or the other is so far ahead in the polls that they're not even campaigning in your state. Really think about clicking the box for somebody else. And don't let somebody tell you you're wasting your vote. Wasting your vote is voting a party just because you don't like the other guy and not making any statement whatsoever. If you're in Pennsylvania or Ohio or some of these other states, it's about 13 to 15 states that are up for grabs, that they're fighting over. If you're in one of those states, you got to take, you pick your man. If it's Obama, you vote for him. If it's McCain, you vote for him. All I say is, know why you're voting for him, know what the guy believes. And I was listening to some people that are going to vote for Obama today on the news, and they were saying things like, well, he's very articulate, and I like the way he communicates. But they don't know what the hell he's communicating. That just sounds good. If you want to vote for the guy, know why you're voting for him. Be honest with yourself about why you're voting for him. In other words, know why you believe what you believe, and then pull the lever for whoever you most believe will fulfill the things that you want for your country. That's fine. But if you're in these states that are just, 10 points to one side or 10 points to the other, your only opportunity to make a statement is to vote third party. It really is. And you're not going to give the election away by voting third party. It's a tremendous lie. So I'm going to kind of get off my political box here. It's not going to be a political show. I just thought that was an interesting question, and it brings up a lot of interesting things. And sorry, folks, I need to pause right here. I've got people doing something really stupid in front of me. All right, folks, I'm back. That was just one of the hazards of doing these broadcasts on the road. I had somebody that was just two different people frozen at a merge point for no reason at all. And I drove through them, and now we can get on with the show. I didn't even cuss. Managed to hold that one in. Anyway, folks, that covers that. Let's get into the topic of today's show, which is going to be on reloading. And I'm going to do my best to make this show work, and we'll see how it comes out. I did try to do a show on reloading before. I didn't like the way it came out. This time I'm just going to kind of go through it the way I would talk about reloading to you. If we met at a gun club or a bar and we started talking about it and you said, you know, I've been thinking about getting into reloading. What's it like? What do you do? What are your recommendations? Instead of trying to elaborately describe the reloading process and how it works and exactly what you do, because that's really not suitable for audio. It's something you need visual, you know, video, pictures, or something like that to really comprehend. So I'll give the basic steps of reloading, but just know that it's not going to be, like, after you listen to this, you're not going to run out and start reloading without additional support, materials, and information. But I do hope to demystify a little bit and make people realize it's not as complicated, I think, as some people make it out to be. That not very long ago, 100 years ago, everybody in the world that fired a gun probably reloaded and, you know, 150 years ago, everybody reloaded because they were all muzzle loaders and, you know, either flintlocks or percussion rifles, and they had to reload. Real brief explanation of what the reloading process really is. After you fire that gun and you eject that case, and it's not a bullet, it's a case. The bullet's the part that goes downrange, that flies through the air. The piece that's left in your gun, your pistol, your rifle, what have you, is the case, or often called a shell in the lines with a shotgun. That is probably the most expensive component of all the components that make up a cartridge. And cartridges, you know, when you have the fully loaded round. Those components are the case, the primer, the bullet, or with a shotgun, maybe the shot, all right, and the powder. And with shotguns and in certain old-style black powder loads, there's waddings, all right. I'm not really going to talk about waddings today. Just want to leave that out so somebody doesn't come in. You forgot the wad, okay. Anyway, those are your main components. And bullets and powder and primers are relatively inexpensive compared to going out and buying cases with them or buying a brand-new, fully loaded retail pack of shells from the store, all right. So the biggest reason that people reload today is to save money. And it is a good way to save money if you're smart about how you do it. I'm going to tell you some of the mistakes I made as we go through the show, so hopefully you won't make them too, because it can become very expensive as a hobby rather than a money saver if you're not careful about the way you do things. You'll always eventually, if you shoot a lot, recoup your investment, but you don't have to dig yourself into a hole first. So, again, I'll get to that. But when you're done with that case, it's perfectly good in most instances, and there's things you have to inspect cases for if you use them multiple times. I won't go into that, because again, it's something I can't really describe without being able to show you examples. If you get a good reloading manual, and the three that I use, because I like to get my information from multiple sources, because anything from a manufacturer is going to push their product, but I've got a pretty balanced view by reading the manuals by Lee, Spear, and Hornady. And those three manuals are what I use, and I get all my load data out of and that I work out of, and that I taught myself the process of reloading with. I didn't have anybody come to my house and say, this is how you set this up. I ordered the stuff. I got the instructions. I followed them. I watched and looked in the manuals, and I just did it. And it's not that hard. Anybody can do it. You just have to be cautious and really follow instructions and document everything you do. That's the big thing. Every time you load rounds, they need to go into a specific box or bag or some type of containment, and they need to be labeled as what they are, how you loaded them, every single component, the bullet, the charge of powder, the type of powder, and the case manufacturer, the primer manufacturer, all that data needs to be there. Because if you're going to ever replicate that load again, You're going to need to follow it exactly. Changing one component of a load can change the way that the load performs. So it's important to document everything. So you take that case and you use a resizing tool, and there's various different types of them. There's a tool called the Lee Loader. It may be something you want to start out with if you want to start out cheap and just get some low-volume reloading goading. And actually, that thing works. It's a little bitty case that all the stuff comes in. It can fit in a shirt pocket. You don't even need a set of what are called dies for this thing to work, all right? It's not a press. It's a tool. And you put the case in it, and you actually knock the case into it with a hammer. And when you resize, you also deprime, which means you're knocking the spent primer out of the case, and you're resizing the case. Because when you fired the gun, massive amounts of pressure have occurred inside that case. And that case expands into the chamber of the gun and fits it perfectly, and then slightly resizes back down, but it's changed from its original dimensions. So when you size, there's two ways that you can size. There's what's called full-length resizing. That's where you completely resize the case back to factory specifications, where if you resize a 3006 full-length case resizing, it'll go into any 3006 anywhere in the world made to proper specifications. That's what you do if you don't know where that round's going to go next. If you're going to maybe you have multiple rifles in the same caliber and you want to load for all of them, you would full-length size. If you acquired brass from somebody else, once fired brass, your buddy shoots 3006s, he doesn't reload, he goes down range and lets off two boxes and he saves the cases for you, brings them back to you. Even if you're going to always fire them in one gun, the very first time that you resize, you'll want to full length resize because that cartridge is now perfect for his chamber, not your own. The other method, and this is often why the person that reloads will make much more accurate ammunition for his rifle than any factory round, is just neck sizing. And that means the only thing that your resizing actually does is it makes the neck the right, you know, sizes it back down so that when you put the bullet in there, there's tension in it and it fits right. And it leaves the case exactly in the shape that it ended up. The reason that works so well, if you think about it, once you fired that round and that brass is form-fitted to your chamber and your rifle, it's a precision fit. All right? And when you put it back in your rifle, everything's in perfect alignment. It's like making a custom round for the gun. That's exactly what you've done. And when you make some types of wildcats, which are maybe I take a cartridge like a 270 and I change its shoulder and I load a 270 round to factory specs with a low reduced, you know, somewhat reduced load. And on my rifle, the shoulder is allowed to move forward and I fire it, bang, and I've made a new case. All right, so it's also called fire forming. All right, so that's takes care of your resizing and your two different types of resizing. All this may sound complicated, but when it comes down to what you're doing, you take the cartridge, you put it into your reloading tool, you pull a lever, or with that little Lee Loader, you smack it into the resizer, and that's it. It's done. All right, so it's not that complicated. In a lot of instances, you'll need to put a little bit of lube on the cartridge, and there's different ways to do that, and you can follow the instructions that come with your equipment that you purchase on how to do that. But just know that a lot of times you need to do that. And one of the things that I've learned is when you do lube your cases, it makes a lot of sense to, if you're loading maximum loads or high, even somewhat near the maximum pressure loads, to clean those cases off from lube. I've had rounds that obviously were not too high of pressure with a little bit of excessive case lube left on them that ended up stuck in the chamber after firing, which can be a sign that the pressures are high. In this case, it was just that lube was causing the cartridges to stick. So that's a little tip for you. Once you've done that, you've resized the case, you need to use a priming tool to put a primer back in the case. The primer's a little round thing at the case head, right? That's what the hammer or the firing pin impacts. Sets the primer off, that ignites your powder, your bullet goes down range, right? Once that's done, you then move into charging with powder. And there are tons of different powder tools out there. I've used the dippers, the Lee's little dippers, which are like little scoops, and there's kind of a right way and a wrong way to use them, but they're, if you follow the loading instructions, they're one of the safest ways. They're also kind of slow. I own a Lee Perfect powder measure. That's what I do most of my reloading with. I really like it. I think it's a great tool. It feels kind of cheaply made because it's made out of rigid nylon and plastic, but it throws very accurate charges for me. It's very easy to set. I can't get in exactly how you set, but it's based on cubic centimeters, and there's a chart that comes with it. There's a chart in the Lee manuals. You look up your powder, and it gives you a number, how much cubic centimeters 1 grain of powder is, and you set it. You throw a charge with it, you check it with your scale. And it's always a good idea when you're setting a powder measure, or even if you've set it, you've done some reloading and come back, to then check and make sure it's throwing accurate charges with a powder scale. That's really, really important, because you do not want to get into a situation where you're putting even a few grains over into a cartridge. You can end up blowing a gun up with that. So you do have to be safe, and you have to think about these things. When you follow procedure, reloading is a very safe hobby. All right, I don't want to scare anybody. I just want to reiterate that you have to follow the procedures that come with your equipment. Once the cartridge is charged with the powder, you then move into seating the bullet. You seat the bullet to a specified length, and I can't really get into that, but you can measure it with calibers. I use Lee reloading dies with my press, and usually what I do is the first time I load a new cartridge, I'll start with seating it to the same length as a factory round, and with Lee, it's really easy. You put a factory round in, you open the headspace on the die way beyond what it needs to be. You lower the press down, you hold it down, and you turn the top seating part of the die in until it makes contact with the top of your case, and then you set the set ring, and that's it. And it's a 10-second process. I've never used anybody else's dies, so I don't want to put anybody else's dies down, but from the instructions I've seen, it looks kind of complicated and tedious, and setting the seating depth with a Lee die is simple, quick, and easy. That's all I can say about that. If you're not familiar with what dies are, if you buy a press, you know, which is the device that actually runs the cartridge up and down so that it can be sized, so that it can have a bullet seated, and eventually if you're going to crimp your bullet so it can be crimped, the die is what actually is set to handle, let's say, 30-06, 270, 38 Special, 44 Magnum. All right, and for every cartridge you want to reload, you need a set of dies. Dies are just basically a tool. All right, there's dies in lots of things outside of reloading, but in reloading, it means a set of tools that go with your press that are specific to the caliber that but the cartridge that you're reloading for. Because if you had 308 and a 30-06, they're both 30 caliber. They're both very similar cartridges, only that one's shorter than the other. But you absolutely have to have a set of dies for 308 and a separate set of dies for 30-06. Some of the handguns actually are dual purpose. For instance, you can buy one set of dies and reload for 38 Special and 357 Magnum, or one set of dies to reload for 44 Special and 44 Magnum. You have to adjust them separately as you reload for each. But again, instructions will come with your dies, and I can't over recommend Lee dies. I think they're probably the best dies out there. As far as value, they're inexpensive compared to the competition, and I know they're easy to use. And for first time reloaders, they really may be the way to go. Your last step, if you choose to, is applying a crimp. Different dies use different methods to apply a crimp. Lee has a die called a factory crimp die, which will put a crimp in any round, including ones that don't have a crimp groove, which if you look at a bullet pulled from a cartridge, some bullets you'll see a little groove that goes around in them, and some you won't. And in many instances, it's difficult or impossible certain dies to crimp around if that bullet doesn't have that crimp groove. But with the factory crimp die from Lee, you can crimp anything. A little bit on crimping. A lot of people think that rounds are more accurate without a crimp, and I guess they can be. I pretty much crimp everything. I'm a survivalist. I expect that my ammunition could be knocked around, beat up. It won't always sit in a nice, perfect target box. I don't shoot 1,000-yard matches. I need my ammunition to be effective, reliable, and be able to shoot minute of deer instead of minute of angle out to 100 yards. That's what I expect out of my ammo. That's what I get. Crimping will ensure a certain level of reliability, and there are certain guns that you might reload for that you will always have to crimp for. Heavy recoiling handguns are one of them, because on that heavy recoil it can move the bullets. Any tubular magazine, so like your 30-30 Marlin, that where you're loading cartridges into the tubular magazine, those need to be crimped. But just follow the stuff that comes with your manuals, and the process itself isn't that hard. And I probably spent more time on the process than I should have. But I just want people to understand that that's the whole process. And I could have reloaded a box of shells while I was describing it, even with what's called a single-stage press, which means I do one step, and then I have to take the die out and put the other die in and do the next step, etc. So that kind of brings me to my next point. I'm going to call three main types of tools. There's an independent tool that does everything. Now, the only one I know of, and if there's somebody else's, I'm not bashing any other manufacturer, I am a big fan of Lee, is the Lee Loader. And I'll put a link to that on the site, and there's a whole list of cartridges. And for many people, especially if you live in an apartment, you don't have room to set up a press or anything, it may be a good first step. Especially if you want to do low-volume reloading, maybe a box of shells a week or something like that. It looks a little crazy to think about tapping a round with a hammer, but I've tried one. They work just fine, and they're a very safe tool if you follow proper procedure and the instructions, and that's true with anything. Then there is what's called a single-stage press, and that's exactly what it sounds like. It's a press that you can only do one stage of reloading with. So after you deprime and resize your case, for instance, you would, let's say, maybe do 20 rounds or 100 rounds or however many you're going to reload. You would all do all of them resized and deprimed. And then once that was done, you would then move on to priming, and you'd use a tool to do that. And then after you primed your case, you would charge it with powder, and then you would need to seat your bullet, and you'd put a new die in your press, and you'd run the bullet in, and then if that happens to be the same die you use for crimping, you would seat all your bullets, reset it to crimp, do all your crimps, or put your, if you're using Lee's factory crimp die, you put that in, you do it. So it's a much slower process than what's called a progressive press. Progressive press, once you get it running, and you got everything set up on it, you pretty much put a new round in, pull it, and it either automatically or you manually turn a turnstile, I guess you'd call it, at the bottom, and a round falls out the other side. You stick a new case in, and you keep doing it, and each station in this progression, on this progressive press, is a different station. So while you're depriming and resizing one case, all right, the case next to it is being primed, and possibly, depending on which press it is, charged with powder, and maybe the next one's being charged with powder because it's already been primed, and then the next station, that one is getting a bullet seated into it, the last one is getting a crimp, and then when you put the new one in, it moves into station two, and that last one pops out. So it's a very, very fast reloading tool. All right, they're obviously more expensive than single-stage presses. My advice, and you don't have to take it, it's just my advice, is start out with a simple, single-stage, inexpensive press. And I can't really recommend too highly what Lee calls the anniversary kit, which gives you a scale, trimmers, gives you everything you need. All you have to do is buy a set of dies, and you can start reloading for one cartridge. All right? And it's a very low cost, and even if you're going to go into a different manufacturer in the future, it's the lowest cost way to see if this is a hobby that's going to stick for you, to really get you into it without going completely cheap on the little loader. So one of those two methods is kind of how I recommend you go into this first. When it comes time to pick a progressive press, shop around, look at what everybody has to offer, make a choice from there. Most reloading dies are interchangeable with other people's press. You can take Lee dies and stick them into an RCBS press. You can take RCBS dies and put them into a Lee press, so you're not locked into one manufacturer. I just really recommend you do that. Now, I did that, and I think it was a good decision. But the big mistake that I made is I decided that I was going to buy everything I needed to reload for the majority of the guns that I owned at the time. And I bought these little things that hold the case heads, a full set of those, which was relatively inexpensive since I bought with Lee. I bought the case trimmer gauges for all of them. I bought dice for everything, and I spent a lot of money when I first bought my reloading equipment. And then I went out and I bought components for every pistol and rifle round that I wanted to reload for. And I bought multiple types of powder for the loads that I wanted to try. So instead of, let's say, buying stuff for my .30-06 and going out and buying one or two types of powder, one or two types of bullets, and then starting to experiment from there, I went out and bought multiple powders and multiple bullets in .30 caliber and reloading dice for my .30-06. I also bought them for my .308. I bought them for .44 Magnum. I bought them for .30-30 Winchester. All right. I bought them for .38 Special and .357 Magnum. I bought it for .223, and I did this all at one time. And you may say, well, if you have the money, what's the problem? Well, the problem is reloading takes more time than you think it does. And when you're first learning, you're not sure about what you're doing, so you kind of fumble around with things. You tend not to be as organized initially as you end up being once you get used to what you're doing and start thinking about it and developing a system. So all those extra things end up being stuff. And when you have lots of stuff, it's kind of cluttered and it's everywhere, and you're trying to, you know, I'm trying to set up a little reloading bench for myself in my home office when I bought all this stuff. They had these drawers, they had all these dies everywhere, and I was constantly pulling things out, looking for things. And I think if I would have just started with one set of dies and reloaded for one cartridge, developed a load or two that I was happy with, and those became my loads, and that's what I loaded for that gun or for all the guns with that caliber and or that, you know, particular cartridge. And once that was done, I said, okay, now I'm going to do .223 and developed a load for my .223. All right. And then once that was done, went out and got a set of dice for .44 Magnum. One powder or two powders and several different bullets for just .44 Magnum. Developed and settled on load or a load or loads for .44 Magnum. If I would have done it that way, my cash outlay would have been smaller because I wouldn't have bought as much stuff. Because when you go on a shopping spree, you're like, I need this, I need that. You're buying four types of powder for one round. And a lot of times that powder maybe not be something you can use in your other rounds because a certain pressure curve to it. And if you start reloading, you'll learn about pressure curves. So my Hodgson 414, I can use it in my .30-06. I could probably do loads for it with a .308, but I can't go dumping it in to my .357 Magnum. So I'm buying, you know, multiple powders. Take your time with this is my message. If you do that, it'll become a fun hobby that you enjoy. If you don't, it can be really overwhelming at first. So one set of dies, one good set of equipment. And again, I can't recommend Lee highly enough, but I can't fault a person for, you know, RCBS or Hornady or MEC or any of these other manufacturers. They're all high quality. I have an uncle that has RCBS equipment. He's had it for, God, the guy's in his 90s. And I remember being a little kid, not even old enough to shoot yet, 3 or 4 years old, going up to his place. He lived just up the road from my grandfather's, and going out into his shed with him. He had all this cool stuff, and seeing that, you know, big green press sitting there that long ago. So we're talking 32 years ago. And he's had it for God knows how much longer than that. And he loves it, and he still reloads. 90-year-old man, he reloads to this day. And he shoots in his backyard. And, you know, there's not many places left where people can do that. So that's a testament to RCBS. So just because I'm a fan of Lee, I'm a fan of Lee because of what it's what I use. But, again, the reason I chose them was I knew that they were all good and they were the most affordable, and I wanted a bunch of stuff. All right, so that's why I picked them. Now, just if I could, I'll give you a few reasons for reloading, maybe some that you haven't thought of. I mean, one is a survivalist is simply that you can't always maybe depend on the fact that you're going to be able to get your hands on ammunition. And if you know the reloading process, if we got into a complete, you know, shit hit the fan scenario someday, there are ways to make your own black powder, pour your own cast bullets from any source of lead that you can beg, borrow, or steal. And while you wouldn't have the high pressure rounds that we fire today, if you teach yourself to load cast bullet loads, if you have reloading equipment and reloading knowledge and a little bit of knowledge of chemistry and the ability to melt lead and mold, you could virtually assure yourself of always being able to produce ammunition under any circumstances. But that's out toward the fringe of survivalism. The other side of that is, as long as you can get components, you can load ammunition. Well, my feeling is, if you can buy components, you can probably buy factory ammunition. So that one's mitigated a little bit. You don't really save a lot of space on storage, I guess, other than you're reusing cases, so there's less cases. They're the bulkiest component. Bullets, when you buy a lot of them, still weigh a lot. Powder cans, you have to be stored safely, just like any ammunition, so there's not much of an advantage there, but it is a good skill to have in a survival situation. The big thing is saving money. You can reload for a fraction of the cost of factory ammunition. You really can. It's a huge savings. So that's my biggest reason for it. It lets me shoot more. Another reason is accuracy. As I explained, when you start loading ammunition that's specific to a gun, you tweak the powder charge. You don't worry which gives me the most velocity. You try multiple loads. What you do is you sit down with your .30-06. This is why it makes sense to start with one cartridge and one gun and load for it until you're happy, and then move on to the next gun you want to reload for. So you sit down with your .30-06, you sit down with the powder you've chosen and the bullet you've chosen. You get your load table, and maybe you load 5 cartridges of the most moderate load in your manual, 5 cartridges of the next charge up, 5 cartridges of the next charge up, and 5 cartridges of the next charge up. Odds are, in most manuals, you'll not even have gotten to the maximum load. And a lot of times, you don't need a maximum load. All right, it's not so that you can make ammunition that's more powerful than factory ammo. Factory ammo today is loaded to maximum in most instances, because they know that the uninformed buy ammunition based on velocity. That's the muzzle. Which one's got the highest muzzle velocity? That's what I'm going to buy. No. Right? So then you go out and you shoot a group with each batch of ammo. You see which one shoots the best. Then you begin tweaking a little bit by maybe seating your bullet a little further in or a little further out, checking with a caliper so that it meets specifications, and following instructions, of course. And eventually what happens is you end up with the perfect charge with that powder, with the perfect bullet set at the perfect length in a case that's been form-fitted to that gun. No factory ammo is going to shoot as accurately in that gun is that custom loaded ammunition. So the customization to the gun and better accuracy is something that is really not necessary for hunting accuracy or self-defense accuracy. But it sure as hell is a lot of fun, and it gives you a lot of pride to take a gun from a factory situation where you set a scope on it, you go out to a range, you start shooting with it with some good quality factory ammo, it shoots 1.5-inch groups, you spend some time working custom loads up for it, and you're able to put a 3/4-inch group on paper. It's really a lot of fun, so it's a hobby more than it is just a skill. And then the next thing is being able to load ammunition that you cannot buy anywhere. All right, and that is a huge advantage to me, and I'll give you a couple examples of some things that I really like to shoot. One is a load that I've given out before, which is a highly reduced load for .44 Magnum. And I really wouldn't call it a reduced load. It is actually and I had to dig through some old manuals to find it. It is a very old load that hasn't been used much, because most people that are shooting heavy slugs in .44 caliber are going to .44 Magnum today. But there was a time when .44 Special was the most powerful .44 cartridge you could get your hands on. And at that time, people did shoot it with 300-grain hard-cast lead bullets. And I found some loads in the older version of the Lee manual that they don't even print anymore for .44 Special loads with, I believe it's .42-27 powder. Do not reload off anything you hear on air, all right? I'll publish the load data for this in the post, and you can see the load data for this again. But it's the lightest load published for .44 Special steel with a 300 grain hard cast bullet. You can't buy that in a store. There's no way you'll ever get your hands on that round unless you load it. So what's so special about it? Here's what's so special about it. It sounds quieter than most manual cocking air guns. You know, these like the Gammos and the Beemans and stuff that have that loud crack to them. It's a very quiet. You don't even have. You wouldn't even have to suppress it. It's so quiet that you can hear the hammer hit the case, and it's because it's still quite powerful, but because of the long barrel of, and this I load this for a rifle, by the way, folks, not a handgun. I'm sure it'd be quite loud in a handgun, but in a rifle, in my 44 Magnum 1894 Marlin, I hear the hammer hit, and it's crack. I mean, it's about as loud as it is. I could probably, I would never do this, but I could probably fire that in my backyard, and even with neighbors on both sides of me, nobody would get alarmed. People would be like, somebody just hit a nail with a hammer, right? And that's what it sounds like. That said, I can group it into a fifth size hole at 50 yards. After that, it starts to deteriorate. It just doesn't have enough oomph to really remain accurate much past 50 yards. But 50 yards is quite a ways out there. At 25 yards, it will penetrate 7 inches of solid pressure-treated lumber and then continue into the ground for another couple inches into dirt. All right, so it has a lot of penetration power because it's a slow velocity, very heavy slug. All right, what this is to me is an amazing survival round. It's accurate enough out to 25 yards. If I was walking around with it as my only choice, I shoot squirrels in the head with it and won't blow them up. If I shot a deer with it, it damn sure would kill him. I guarantee you that it's up to snuff with any of the old black powder, you know, patch and ball stuff. It's got at least that much power. With a headshot or a neck shot, it would drop a deer-sized animal to the ground instantly because it's quiet, all right? It doesn't attract attention where you may not want attention, and it's very cheap to reload because you're reloading a lead bullet. Lead bullets are cheaper than jacketed bullets. If you want it to really be cheap, you can cast your own lead bullets. And there's maybe I'll do a show someday on that. It's a fun little hobby to do as well. So that makes it ultra cheap. And the other thing that makes it cheap is you can reload a ton of rounds from one can of powder because you're using such a small charge. This would this makes it something you can shoot in high numbers very inexpensively, which means you can practice with it like crazy. All right, you don't have recoil, you don't have noise, you can use it to teach younger shooters. It's just an amazing little load that I could never come up with if I went out to buy them in the factory. All right, same cartridge, same gun. Another thing I can't buy. Hornady makes a 44 caliber slug, and most of the handgun cartridges in 44 Magnum top out at a 240 grain jacketed flat or hollow point. And then there are some 300 grain stuff. But this 265 grain flat point was made for a cartridge called the 444 Marlin, all right, which is a great Woods cartridge and a lever action gun. But there's no factory ammunition of that I'm aware of anyway that has that bullet loaded into a 44 Magnum case. But if you get Hornady's manual, there are loads listed for it. It's very safe. And that bullet is extremely tough, and it's designed for higher velocities. The 240 grain slugs that most handgun ammunition have are really designed for handgun velocities. And you get a big velocity boost in a 44 Magnum when you put it through a 20 or 22 inch barrel. All right, so I've got a heavier slug that's tougher that'll do a better job on deer-sized game for true hunting with that round, and I can build that custom cartridge. Right. So there's another example. And that's a full power, full bore load, pushing that 265 grain slug, and it's just the bullet that makes it unique there. I can't get that round loaded that way. Another example is I load very reduced loads for 30-06 for practice, and when you're teaching a new shooter to shoot, you can step them up from, let's say, a 223 into a 30-06, but when they first start shooting that 30-06 and they're getting used to the gun, its dimensions, its feel, you can build confidence in them by letting them start out with a round that's loaded made it to 30-30 velocities. It has a lot less recoil and muzzle blast. So you slowly can move a new shooter up in power with a gun. And that reduced load is, if it's 30-30 velocity, and I had a new shooter that I wanted to start hunting deer with a 30-06, we could use that round loaded with a bullet that's designed for those lower velocities. He could hunt with that gun, and as he got older or she got older and was ready to step up in power, we could keep one gun and let that shooter kind of grow into the gun. All right, these are all things that one cannot do with factory ammunition, until recently anyway. Remington actually now has some reduced loads for popular calibers like 270 and 30-06. If you don't want to reload and you want to take that approach, that's a good way to do it. But you'll never have the flexibility. You can't. Those reduced loads aren't reduced to the levels you can safely, if you use published data, reduce your loads to with proper reloading techniques. So those are just some things. Now, folks, I hope this show went well. If you're not into guns, if you're not into reloading, it may not have. Even if you are, it may have sounded like I'm all over the place. Let me tell you, this is the second time I tried to do this show. I am going to publish today's show, so there is a show today. I've wanted a show on reloading. We now have one. This was a difficult show to do. It's hard to explain these techniques driving in a car. But hopefully it's just made you aware of and familiar with and maybe giving you the confidence, if you've always wanted to reload, to take that first step. And even if it's just a little $20 tool and buying some components and getting some experience with it, you know. And I'll put links to all the major manufacturers on this post, so you can look at what they have and, you know, decide which equipment's right for you if you want to take the step into reloading. But personally, what I can tell you is when I started, it was about I wanted more accurate ammo, I wanted things I couldn't get anywhere else, and I wanted to save a lot of money. Now when I reload, I find it very centering. And it takes me out of all the crap that I deal with every day. Because when you're reloading, you have to pay attention. You have to pay attention to having the right charge, the right component, doing things safely. You got to wear safety glasses. You have to follow your instructions. You have to document everything. And because you're so focused, because you know you have to be, what it does for you is it pulls you out of your boss being on your ass, your spouse being upset with you, the work that you have left to do, the grass that needs to be mowed. For that time, for that hour and a half, for that 45-minute period, it's the only thing you're focused on. And it makes it a very rewarding and enjoyable hobby, and it will add to your skill set. And I believe it should be part of any survivalist plan to eventually teach themselves at least the basics and give them the capability to reload for at least a few calibers of their primary weapons that they keep for themselves and their families. And I think that when you start adding to it the ability that you can make custom ammunition, and not just the custom accurate ammunition, but custom ammunition like my 44 special load for a 44 Magnum rifle, it starts to get really cool with what you can do. But just follow my advice and trust me on this. Take it slowly. You can always buy more. It's hard to send stuff back, and it sucks when you have to sell it on Craigslist for less than you paid because you bought what you didn't need. All right? My final piece of advice on reloading. Do not, I'll say this again, do not use reloaded ammunition in your home defense weapon. Your shotgun, your pistol, your rifle, your carbine, whatever it is. If you keep a gun in the home loaded and prepared for things like burglars entering your home, use factory ammunition, all right? Because there's nothing wrong with using reloaded ammunition for anything out to hunting. And if I'll shoot a deer with it, I'd shoot a man breaking into my house with it. But it's the same thing when I talked about, you know, your black tactical-looking shotgun with heat shield and all, and having a DA use that. If you get some overzealous DA that's anti-gun, that's in the system, and there's lots of them out there trying to make a case that you as a lawful homeowner actually just wanted to kill the guy that broke into your home, and he was a poor victim. And it does happen to gun owners, so don't think it can't happen to you. When you use reloaded ammunition, you give that idiot another piece of ammo himself to prosecute you with. What he will say is that this guy was so into shooting somebody that he went out and bought the most powerful handgun powder he could get his hands on. And then he went out and bought these bullets that are called cop killers. And then he put them together and he built this round, right? And he created these things so they would expand and kill people. And you know what? When you buy ammunition from a store that's Hollow Point ammunition, it's exactly what it is. It's why Hollow Points exist, so they expand and they dump their energy. And they do a lot of damage and trauma. But if you buy them from Winchester or Remington, you were a lawful gun owner that went out and purchased suitable home defense ammunition and used the gun that you had available at the time. If you've reloaded the ammo, you've built custom ammunition for killing men. I don't believe that's true. I just believe that that's the way it will be used to prosecute you with, and I don't want to see it happen. So that's my advice, and I've read, I'm sure in the Lee manual, that's where I got that original piece of advice, and it stuck. And I believe in my set of Hornady manuals that same point is made. So this is not my original idea, but it makes a lot of sense to me, and that's my final piece of advice on reloading. Other than that, give it a try. I also want to throw one last thing, and I know a lot of hobbies people like to involve kids with. This is one you can eventually get it right yourself. Know exactly what you're doing, have a complete system set up, be completely organized. Then you can start involving kids with it in a very supervisory controlled way. This is not something that you should let kids be involved with while you're still figuring it out yourself. It'll add to the possibility to make a mistake. You end up with something like a double charge where you have two charges instead of one into a shell. You end up with a blown breech. So be safe, and one of the ways to do that is don't let inexperienced people or people with limited attention spans. In fact, I would say unless you're with a mentor that's a reloader already, when you first start, close the door and be completely alone with your thoughts and really think about what you're doing until you develop a system. So that's my final piece of advice on this. Again, folks, I hope this show came out okay for you. Tune in tomorrow. We'll go back to some more practical stuff where even if you don't give a rip about guns or ammunition, you'll enjoy the show. Again, this has been Jack Spirico with the Survival Podcast, helping you figure out how to live a better life if times get tough or even if they don't.
Makes you wonder where your money went. You can scream. You can holler, it really doesn't matter, 'cause it all gets spent.